This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And I'm going to try to put this down very carefully. Because as near as I could tell, I recorded this podcast yesterday. And it did. I saw the numbers going. But when I got home, I went to look for the podcast and it was not there. So I didn't get it uploaded. So we're trying it again. And I'm really hoping this works. If this doesn't work, I may have to send this recorder back because, you know, you can't really have a recorder that's not recording. Not when it costs you, what, $250? So it's like, yeah, nope, can't do it. So I'm going to drive for just a little bit here, and then I'm going to pick this up and make sure that it's still recording. So yeah, here we go. Going to pick it up. Looks like it's still going. Okay, good. All right. So, good week at work. It is Friday morning as opposed to Thursday. We're celebrating Halloween this weekend. So I finished up my Puss in Boots costume and people seem to enjoy that. The boots were a little more of a challenge than I thought they were going to be. Because I put this together quick, so I normally get a 13 in a boot, and all they had was an 11, so I got the 11. And they felt okay when I got them in, but after you've been walking around on them for 2 hours, your fritz get a little squished, but that's okay. It's fine. Heading home now. Taking the boots off. I was planning on wearing this to the dentist this afternoon, but I don't know that I'm going to do that. I may go back to the Halloween costume for last year because it was, speaking of something else, where is my phone? Okay, there it is. The Halloween costume for last year was actually an inflatable chicken. So I had a jester's costume that I wore with an inflatable chicken. And people did seem to get a big kick out of that. So I may just throw that back on because it's cute. It's cute. And it doesn't have boots. It just has flat shoes in it. So it's a lot easier than these boots. The only question would be is if I had ever worn something like that down to Dr. K. And what I'll have to do is I'll just have to go ahead and check my list, because I do have a list of all the things that I've worn down before. I think I have worn the Argyle suit before, but I haven't worn it with the inflatable chicken. So I think that's going to be a plan. We're just going to go that way with it. Work was good this week. We got a lot of good things done that needed to get done. So that was good. All is well. Writing is going fine. I'm over 60,000 words at this point. I'd like to get to 90,000 words by the end of the first sprint. The target is 80,000 words by the end of the first sprint. And I've found that if I can get to 90 in the first sprint, then the second sprint is a ton easier. It's just so much easier and more relaxed. So that's the plan. I'm at over 60,000 words now, actually 66,000 words. And I still have today and tomorrow, and then I have another 3 weeks before I go back and start editing book 21. So that basically means I've got to get, counting this week, I've got to get about 7,500 words a week done, and I'm done. I think I can do that. So I think we're in pretty good shape. And then everything gets different, goes different when I start to work on book 23. Because for book 22, I'll still be on the regular schedule of 10,000 words a week. But for book 23, the second writing sprint, I'll be working halftime. So, you know, that 10,000 words is going to get a whole lot easier if I have multiple more hours during the week that I can do it. So I think we're going to be fine. And at this point, you know, there's only 2.5 books left. And so even if it would take me 2 or 3 years to get those done, which it won't, unless it won't, the good Lord willing, the crick don't rise and the devil don't hinder. It won't, because I've been on schedule and I want to stay on schedule, but my schedule is going to loosen up here in about 9 months, 8-9 months. So it will be fine. It will be fine. So costumes are going good. I just had a few little things left to do on the Puss in Boots costume. Got those done last night, so we're good. Now I need to make a pivot and start working on Pretend That You're a Time Traveler Day. So this will be fun. I've got most of the stuff. I have to figure out what to attack first. And I think what I'm going to attack first is a bunch of small building projects, just to get my feet wet as to what's possible. I've been studying up on, what's it called? There's a controller program for LED lights that's pretty amazing. You can run it on a bunch of different stuff, and you can just get, I think they're called E32 chips, and they have built-in Wi-Fi. So as long as you, whatever you're running the control software on, has Wi-Fi, and you're going through the same Wi-Fi, you can control all those other things. I mean, it's really pretty cool. And just all kinds of different patterns. You can set up all types of groupings and how many LEDs are in each grouping. I mean, it's really, because all the LEDs are individually addressable. So it's pretty cool. So I'm going to play with that for a couple of days just to see what I've got going there. And then I have to start the designs in earnest. And I got a bunch of pieces that I've ordered, and I just need to spread them out on the table, see what I've got, see what I think I need more of, and then just start going and come up with a costume. So we'll probably be fine. It'll be fun. It'll be fun one way or another. And I expect that I'm going to have sound effects on this one as well, because I mentioned it several weeks ago that I had bought a portable sound system. It's only like 15 pounds. Portable sound system that is battery operated, and it has a big subwoofer in itself. So I should be able to put together a presentation that's fancy, you know. So I should be able to sync the lights with the presentation and do like time travel or sound effects. So it'll be fun. I think people will enjoy it. And I will wear sensible shoes. I'll just wear combat boots, because that's a lot better than the boots I was wearing today. But everyone seemed to enjoy it, so it was good. So work is good, book is good, costumes are good. I came across a clip out of a podcast called Dave Saves America, although I could have sworn he said it was Dad Saves America, but Dave Saves America. And he was really very interesting. He was talking to Brent Weinstein and, no, Weinstein. People have told me what it is, and then I've got to get a mnemonic. And Heather Haying. And they got on the topic of society and the state of society. And it's so interesting to watch as people try to come to grips with spiritual problems, and they try to use natural solutions for them. And when they fail at that, they then start leaning towards spiritual solutions, but they're not ready to go all the way. So it's like, that's fine. Just keep thinking, keep talking. You'll get to us. And so this was one of those things where Brent Weinstein was talking about how they are seeing, and other people have said this, and I have seen it, they have seen a return of people to more traditional Orthodox religious beliefs. And Brent Weinstein was talking and he said, I'm going to just read a bunch of this because I find it fascinating. The re-embrace of religion makes a tremendous amount of sense. We are so far off track, and it is so obvious that atheism has something to do with it. I don't think atheism is the cause, but it took the safety off the gun, and civilization has now run into this hyper-novelty spiral that is literally destroying us. You can see the individuals are not well, this civilization is not well, and this is going to end badly. It is absolutely natural, and I would imagine that if we had the ability to look back into history with sufficient resolution, we would see that there is a retreat to orthodoxy at the point that you find your civilization has gone nuts. And I think this is discussed right now, that you know Sodom and Gomorrah are something, and the idea there's something to retreat to when a civilization has lost its mind. So it's not surprising we would see this re-embrace of these ancient traditions. And then he said, here's the part that's going to be a stretch. We can't do it, and yet we must do it if we're going to get out of this spiral. We absolutely have to It may well, there's no punctuation in this automatic transcription. It may well be that the best tools that we have at our ancient wisdom patterns that our ancestors knew. Oh, okay, I agree. And then he kind of goes sideways. But we can't return to them because we don't live in their world, and that's the problem. So really, I think the question is, can we embrace the need to retreat from hurtling into chaos, and can the religious figure out how to, I wish I had a better word, modernize? Can the religions bring themselves up to date that their authors didn't know anything about in the modern world? And that's not an easy trick to do, because when you look back at the ancient religious texts, which we regard as a product of evolution, is a compendium of wisdom that was built up by an evolutionary force that pruned the wheat from the chaff. And so it's not up to date with modern circumstances, and there's nobody on earth who can look at those texts and say, this is the part that's relevant, and here's the part that's relevant, but it's written in such a way that you derive the wrong lesson, and here's the part that's toxic. Because the new circumstances are radically different from the old ones, and there's nobody on earth who can do that job. It's, you know, it's the Chesterton's fence all the way down. Now then. Okay. So, his primary assumption is that all religious frameworks of thought were derived by evolutionary processes. That's his primary assumption. And therefore, there was nothing transcendent about them. They just helped the society survive in whatever context it was in. I'm going to check again to make sure this is still running. It says it's still running. And the record is on, and the numbers are running. So I'm going to assume this is working. So Brent Weinstein assumes that it was an evolutionary process, and therefore it can't work today. This is where Brent Weinstein is wrong, because it wasn't an evolutionary process. The claim is made for Christ that he is the Son of God, that he is transcendent, and therefore the things that he is saying are transcendent. Now, maybe they have been taken by religious leaders through the years and turned into something that is not transcendent. But that doesn't mean the words aren't transcendent. And some would say we don't know the words because the words that we have in the Bible aren't the actual things that Jesus said. But Jordan Peterson makes an excellent point that when the Pharisees asked Jesus, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And Jesus says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. We hear that today and we're like, that makes sense. But as Jordan Peterson says, that's an astonishing statement 2,000 years ago. That's a transcendent statement from 2,000 years ago. Because that foreshadows separation of church and state. And that idea did not exist. It did not exist 2,000 years ago. And yet, you have these words written down that even the most conservative or the most liberal estimate for when the Gospels were written still put it approximately 2,000 years ago. So, that's already one instance of a transcendent saying. And you can go to all of Jesus' sayings and you can see that level of transcendence in all of them. So, yes, it's true if all of your religious belief is formed from an evolutionary process. But if you have a being who is transcendent, who sees the beginning from the end, when he makes statements, the glorious thing about those statements is they work. They work in every context. They work in every time frame. They work for us today just as well as they worked for the disciples 2,000 years ago. Because the essence of the gospel comes down to something very simple. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. And as I've said before, in times past, I have tried to just say, we just need to love our neighbors. But that's not going to work. That's not the end of it. Because you have to have that transcendent relationship. And you have to understand the context of that transcendent relationship in order to be empowered to love your neighbor. I was talking to a buddy today at breakfast, and we were talking about the parable of the counting house, that a king was settling accounts. And he called in a man, and he said, you owe me such and such, was an enormous amount. And the man said, please, please, please forgive me. And so the king forgives him. And then that man goes out and grabs somebody else who owes him a paltry amount and says, I demand you pay me. And he says, I don't have it. Don't have it. Please forgive me. And so he has the guy thrown in jail. Well, when the king hears about it, he goes back to that man. And he said, I've reinstated your debt and you're going to be thrown in jail until you pay it. Which is effectively a life sentence. And that's what love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength does. It reminds you of the relationship. It reminds you that there is a hierarchy of forgiveness and love, that God has loved us and forgiven us. Therefore, we love our neighbor and we forgive our neighbor. This is Phil Ferrand. And I have made it home. Now let's see what we've got here. Okay, the numbers are still running. It is 19 minutes. I'm going to stop this and go downstairs and try to upload it. Wish me luck.